Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Do you have a question for Zorba? Then give us a call now at 1-800-462-7413. And of course, along with your calls, Zorba, some interesting research?
Yes, women. Are they getting more beautiful as time goes on? And does that alter their reproductive success and affect our lives?
And?
Well, now we'll talk about swine flu. That's the other one. Two very different topics.
And our recipe.
Onion dip. Now, French onion dip, it's what my mom used to have. She used to put in Lipton's French onion dip mix and mix it with a bunch of sour cream. It was a high-fat dip. This is guilt-free, low-fat French onion dip, just like your mom used to make, but heart healthy.
I didn't know Lipton had a French onion.
No. She used to make it. Didn't your mom do that? She took a container of sour cream, and then she put in French onion soup, mixed it up, and she called it a party. Your mom didn't do that?
No, she was much less complicated.
That's not very complex.
800-462-7413. Zorba, let's get to the phones. A listener with us now in Texarkana, Arkansas. Hi.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. How can we help?
Well, I am 39 years old, and I've had really bad allergies all of my life. And for the past 2 years, they've almost gone away. But the sinus infections that I've always gotten have remained, and they're very severe. They give me really high fevers, and I almost always go down for 4 or 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about 5 years ago, I did see a doctor and just kind of generally discussed this topic. I saw my family doc, and he was looking in my nose and said, well, you're 70% blocked on one side. And then we just went about our business. And I'm thinking today, I wonder if there's a connection between me being blocked and me continuing to get sinus infections, even though my allergies have kind of died down.
What other allergies did you have besides the sinus stuff?
You know, you're talking about just being outside, you know, grasses, and you know, I played a lot of soccer and tennis, so I was outside, and that was really it. I mean, no indoor allergy type things, just really kind of exposure, contact to grasses, pollens, you know, that kind of thing.
And it all went away at the same time except for this?
It really has. It's kind of strange.
Uh-huh. It's very interesting. First of all, sinuses, allergies, they kind of commingle together. One of the advantages of getting older in life is that our allergies tend to disappear. And so it's kind of one of the things that happens. And the reason is our immune system is not as robust as we get older, and the immune system is involved with allergies. So the allergies tend to disappear, but we're more likely to get pneumonia and die. So there is a disadvantage there. Getting back to the allergies, first of all, they tend to go away really when you're in your 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, but they tend to get better. What do you take for your allergies? Do they don't bother you anymore, or do they still bother you?
I stopped taking, just over-the-counter things altogether. I haven't had anything this year.
Good. So allergies are better. One of the things about sinuses, first of all, is we don't know why some people get chronic sinus infections and others do not. And there are a number of theories that involve. One theory is that there are certain organisms. They might be bacteria. They might be molds. They might be yeast that live in some of our sinuses. And they simply periodically flare up because you've got the right environment, if you will. That's one theory. Another theory is that some people just have an ostium, a little hole in their sinuses. It's a little bit smaller, and so things don't drain as well. Another theory is that it has nothing to do with this at all, and it's simply an allergic response to what's going on. All those theories are theoretical. So the real answer for you is how do we keep this from happening? Now, do you use a neti pot at all? Have you heard of a neti pot?
Yes, I do. I do the squeeze bottle, actually.
Squeeze bottle's great.
The low-pressure squeeze bottle.
You bet. And you do that when your sinuses bother you? Is that when you start to use it?
Yes.
Okay, good. So that's step number one. Next step is you've taken steroid nasal sprays like fluticasone, any, you know, that are often given for allergies?
I did, but I don't take those anymore either.
Okay, but you have taken them. What they do is they reduce the inflammation within the sinuses, you know, when you're bothered. So that's step number two. Mm. And step number three is, unless you have a fever, you want to stay away from antibiotics. And the reason is, when we actually go in and look at the sinuses, if we put a needle in the sinus and take out the fluid, we find most of the time nothing's there. And nothing's there usually means there's a virus or yeast that really is not covered by antibiotics. So It's using a squeeze bottle. It's, you know, trying to keep your nose clear. If you do start to have a stuffy nose, you know, hitting the steroid nasal spray and staying away from antibiotics. And that's kind of where it's at. And what happens is you're going to periodically have your mucous membrane just sort of swell up, and then they're going to go down, and they're going to swell up and go down, and that's your body.
I see. That's great. Okay, well, I appreciate it, because I was wondering, some friends had said, oh, you know, I've had people I know, and they've had the sinus surgery to fix it, and that just scares me.
Right. I would stay away from sinus surgery unless you have proven bacterial infections with a fever and an elevated white count that do not get better. That is the only way I would have to do sinus surgeries. We're doing far fewer sinus surgeries than we did in the past. And if you go to an ENT doc and they say, I think you should have sinus surgery, get a second opinion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a listener with us in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, all my life, I've never suffered from allergies, and about 7 months ago, I started having allergies, and they actually started really, really small, and I actually have two Siberian Huskies, and I think I'm allergic to them, and it started out with a cough, and it slowly and slowly have gotten worse to where sinus infections. Now I'm getting ear infections. My upper body is actually starting hurting, and it's to the point where I leave the house for business and everything clears up. And it's miserable.
This started when you got the Siberian Huskies?
It didn't start when I got my Huskies. It just started when, I mean, Siberian Huskies actually blow their coats, and it happens when they blow their coats.
And, well, an option for you, I'm guessing, is not getting rid of the dogs.
That's not an option. I'd rather get rid of my husband than get rid of my dogs.
That was going to be my question. I was going to say, are you married? Who are you more likely to get rid of, your husband or the dogs? You just answered that. Yeah, Tom and I are both dog lovers, and We're both married, so we know exactly where life goes.
No comment.
No comment. There it is. There it is. Cooper would be happy. I don't know about Monica, but Cooper would be happy. Is it worse when they blow their coats when they...
It is. It really is worse. Mm-hmm. I mean, and there's nothing you can do, because they actually will blow their coat twice a year. And the bad thing is they are house dogs. But you will see the Huskies virtually lose a coat twice a year, and then they grow it back. There's nothing you can do. It's just something that they naturally do.
Okay, so the issue ultimately is this. Sounds like it's related to the dog. You're not going to get rid of the dogs, but you have to do a couple things to your environment. First of all, what you have to do with the environment is minimize the amount of dander that's around. And I know that not everything is called dander, but basically, you know, product of the dog that's going to do that. One way you do it, of course, is with regular grooming, making sure that, you know, that you vacuum, you get it all out of the house. And I recommend that you get these ion concentrators. They're sort of weird things. They throw ions into the air, but they charge dust particles. And you can buy them on television if you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning on the QVC channel. You know, periodically, I can't sleep at night because I'm on call, and I get a few calls, and I'll go downstairs, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, they're all infomercials. And, you know, here it is, an ion producer, but find a cheap one. And the reason is they will charge the particles that the dog is sort of releasing this dander, and it sticks to the wall. It's kind of an interesting thing, because it will tend to stick to the wall, stick to the floor, and that may reduce it in the environment. An air filter on the furnace, for some people, you change the filter on the furnace, that makes a difference. That's all environmental. That's number one. Number two, regular grooming of the dog, too. It's got to be groomed, whatever you do with brushing and everything else. And if you're grooming the dog, you may want to wear a little mask like we do for the influenza mask to keep that up. Next step, you need total antihistamine care, you've got to take an over-the-counter loratadine. I would not take one. I would try one, two, three, or four. In Europe, loratadine is a 40-milligram tablet. It makes people a little sleepy. But I would take one in the morning, maybe one at noon, and a Benadryl at bedtime. It's a better antihistamine. It'll make you sleep. 50 milligrams of Benadryl, that's the same. Tylenol PM, a couple of Tylenol PMs will have it. Take that at bedtime. And then finally, total steroid nasal spray, two squirts in the morning, two squirts in the evening. Do that. See what happens. If it gets better, then you know it's allergies and you don't have to study it anymore. And, you know, then the next step is get rid of the husband, put the dog in the other room.
Here's another suggestion. In order to keep you from getting so much, so many allergies, have your husband do the vacuum.
Well, you know,
good point.
I vacuum 5 times a day, I'm telling you. And,
well, get your husband to do that, because while you're vacuuming, that would stir the stuff up and it would make it worse, I would think.
Perfect. You hear this, George? Because he's a loyal listener.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413.
I hope my wife is not listening.
Well, your dog doesn't.
And if you are, Penny, this was only a call. This is only entertainment. This is not real life.
Well, your dog doesn't even shed.
No, my dog doesn't shed. But I don't vacuum.
Now, Zorba, we often, almost always, have really, really, really important research, and this one we're going to get to right now tops them all, I think. Researchers have found that the women of today are more beautiful than the women of the last generation or the generation before.
That's right. That's right. And as a result, they are able to have children and more children, right? Is that what it is? It's kind of an interesting study. The study actually looked at women, and it looked at, they took pictures of women. They looked at pictures of women in various, you know, in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. It's very difficult, of course, because hairstyles change. But basically, they had a way of evaluating a face on a woman, other ways of evaluating them, and then had people say, well, is this person beautiful or not beautiful? And it's interesting because some of these things tend to be cross-cultural. For instance, men and women with high zygomatic arches.
What?
A high zygomatic arch is when you look at somebody and they have a high cheekbone.
Oh, okay.
And a high zygomatic arch tends to be, across many, many cultures, to be considered a sign of beauty. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's within our society, high cheekbones, it's very interesting. They looked at beautiful women to see whether or not they had more children. There were other issues involved too. And lo and behold, women who tended to be more appealing were about 20 to 30% more likely to actually have children. So, in other words, beauty may actually have produced more children.
So,
you know, 16% in some study and 20% in another study. But it's very significant.
So the children tend to take on the characteristics of the parents. So the children tend to get more beautiful as they.
That may be an issue. May also be the way that women are caring for themselves. It may be different. If you look at the concept of an older woman 100 years ago, they often dressed in dowdy clothing. Mm-hmm. They looked like they just kind of sat around and didn't do much. And most of those women were 50 years of age. Mm-hmm. And a 50-year-of-age woman today is an active woman. Now, what's fascinating about this is there's been no change in men. Nada. The caveman, the man of 100 years ago, the man today, as he gets older, is just as ugly as he ever was. But men did not appear. The beauty of men, the handsomeness of men, did not appear to affect the number of children that they actually produced. Yeah. It was the attractiveness of women that did it, but not of men.
Well, that's because women have different standards of selection, I'll bet, of their mates than men have.
Well, that's exactly it. The studies show that generally women are going to select men who they feel can protect them. Uh-huh. And within our modern society, certainly our industrial and post-industrial society, protection means money. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean the ability to fight off predators. It means the ability to pay the credit card bill and not get a subprime mortgage. Mm-hmm. So men who were richer tended to have more children and in some societies more wives than men who were poor. Yeah. So for women, beauty. For men, money. Yeah. That's the equation.
Well, as far as the women being more beautiful today, I'll disagree with that, research. Yeah. I think the women of my wife's generation are the most beautiful.
And Monica, I hope you're listening to that.
800-462-7413. to a listener now in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. Hi, Tom.
What's up?
Well, I was calling because I have noticed that my brain has gotten very, very forgetful in the last 4 months, and the only thing I can contribute that to is the fact that I took Clomid, which is a fertility drug, for 3 months in a row. But you don't take very much of the drug when you take it during your cycle. And I don't take anything else. I don't take supplements or vitamins or really anything. So I'm just wondering, where can this forgetfulness be coming from?
Well, Clomid is not a drug that normally causes forgetfulness. What else is going on in your life? You know, you're taking Clomid for a reason, right?
Right.
Do you have children right now?
Yeah, I do have a 2.5-year-old, mm-hmm. So I was able to get pregnant naturally before.
Okay, and you know, cycles and pregnancy can be a very difficult thing. It's a very arduous time, you know, in a relationship. If you're trying to get pregnant and you can't get pregnant, it's difficult, and it seems like everybody around you is getting pregnant. And you always hear about people, oh, gee, I stopped birth control and I got pregnant the next month. And you never hear about the other side of that, which is people who try numerous times and don't get pregnant. Mm-hmm. And most people do not get pregnant that first month at all. Getting back to the Clomid issue and the other issue, do you think you might be depressed?
Not really. I'm pretty much an upbeat person. If I was depressed, and not over the pregnancy issue for sure, because I'm not like a worrywart type. I'm, you know, pretty active and upbeat. But
okay.
We have been sort of in the transition of a move for the last year, and then my husband lost his job in 07. Which we turned into like a happy time. So we took a month and we took a long road trip and we enjoyed each other's company. And so, you know, we try to turn all that around, but I'm sure that stress still undermines, you know, what you're doing. And, you know, now that we're in Cincinnati, I've made friends and have things to do, but I don't know, the depression thing, you know, I don't have the signs of depression, but I definitely have, you know, bouts of feeling lonely here and there, or, you know, wishing we had more couples friends and things like that we had back in Chicago.
Well, the reason I mention that is quite often when people come in with memory disturbances, and let's push away the people in their 80s who we worry about, but people often come in with memory disturbances. We look for signs of Alzheimer's. You clearly don't have that, but we look at that, and quite often it turns out that either stress, anxiety or depression can manifest as a, quote, memory disturbance, where people will come in and they'll say, I'm not thinking the way I used to. I can't, you know, I have issues with remembering things or doing things, or I have, you know, I don't have everything at my fingertips when I'm talking. And I think stress is exactly what's underlying it. I don't think this is Clomid. And that's actually the good news, because the good news is eventually it'll disappear on its own. In other words, when there's stress-related issues, when all of the issues tend to sort of normalize, then the memory tends to come back. And so part of it is really perceived, you know, memory loss, and then part of it can be real memory loss. So I think, like you said, you're not depressed. You don't feel like you're depressed, but clearly there have been major monumental things that are going on in your life, the Clomid issue, the moving issue, the job issue, and you've done some very good things. You've taken really good time to try to wrap that up, but I think I would stick with that. I don't think you need any medicine, and I think that over time this is going to improve. And if not, then I think what you have to do is talk to your family doc to just see whether or not you can get an evaluation. Often a simple evaluation just leads you the right way with cognitive behavioral therapy to make some changes in your life. So,
because I did mention it to him, and he just kind of pushed it off as, oh, it's probably just stress, you know, just wait and see.
No, I don't think you should push it off. I think if it's something that you think about, I think a cognitive behavioral therapist is someone who's really good with that, because they identify, A, where are the stresses occurring, and B, what can I do? And you've already done a few things, the road trip and a number of other things you've done, but often a good behavioral therapist will help you sort of get your thoughts together and determine what your next step should be, because you're in a new city and you can do it. So,
okay.
Thank you for your call.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Zorba, I hope this first batch of callers has loosened up your tongue, because it's time for another edition of Rapid Fire. As always, these are questions from our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox, And away we go.
Okay, okay. I am ready.
A listener named Jack leads off and ponders, if our body temperature is 98.6 degrees and our bodies are constantly working to maintain that temperature, then why is it that when you're outside, 98.6 degrees is not a comfortable temperature?
Because you're always burning up energy, and when you burn up energy, that produces heat. And so when you're at 98.6 and it's 98.6 outside, it's too hot. That's why a little bit lower is much more comfortable. Now, if you're dead, 98.6 outside is primo.
But you won't enjoy it. Amy is next up and writes, I occasionally like to get massages at my local spa, but it seems that whenever I do, I get a cold the following day. I've had others tell me that the same thing happens to them. What's going on?
It's the wrong massage therapist. Mm-hmm. I'd recommend changing massage therapist. Clearly, the cold germs are in the air, sneezing on you, coughing on you. Go to another massage therapist. When I get my massage, I go out. I don't get a cold the next day. I feel awesome.
You get massages?
Absolutely. Once a month, Tom. Oh. Regularly, like clockwork.
Perry from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and his wife are heading to Greece soon. And they were wondering if you've ever heard of no jet lag pills. And if so, what is your take?
Yes, I chew them up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and watch those infomercials for no jet lag pills. And you know what? They're absolutely worthless. They don't work. Jet lag is a phenomenon. You travel 12 hours in the other part of the world to Greece, you will have jet lag. So no coffee, no alcohol for a couple days before, sleep on the airplane, and good luck.
Pat from Spokane, Washington would like to know if you can absorb vitamin D from sunshine coming through a window. She plans on sitting in front of a window during sunny winter days unless you say it's a waste of time.
The answer is yes, you can make some vitamin D. However, a cheaper, very cheap, inexpensive way of getting vitamin D is by an amazing thing called a vitamin D tablet. You can get 1,000 units of vitamin D for $10, 100 tablets. So for $20 to $30 a year, you can have all the vitamin D you want and sit anywhere in the house. It frees you from sitting in front of the window. Isn't that great?
Well, but it's kind of nice to sit in front of the window and look out on the countryside.
Hey, wait a minute. Just sitting. Well, countryside. What if she lives in the city? What if she's looking at an alley?
It
then it may
be.
Not be as interesting.
Could be. Finally, Phil from Springfield, Missouri wants to know, is it safe to eat a homegrown tomato if you see where a wild cottontail rabbit, an opossum, or a skunk has taken a bite out of it? Is it safe to cut that section out and then eat the tomato, or should I have my ex-wife taste test it first?
He answered the question himself. Have the ex-wife taste it first.
This is obviously
who would
joke
eat a
question.
Tomato with a bite from a possum out of it? Get a life, public radio people. Get a life.
We're out of time for this edition of Rapid Fire, but make sure to get your question in for our next round. Just send your email to
Zorba@WPR.org. An opossum?
I know. A skunk?
A rabbit?
A recipe is coming up next. We have more callers, of course, some more medical research to talk about in our Medical Mythbuster, all right here where you are on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. With Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Here's that number again. If you have a question for Zorba, you can give us a call at 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Back to the phones after our recipe, and we have that now coming up, Zorba, from Twin Lakes, Wisconsin listener Corey McVeigh. Corey, hi.
Hi.
Now, this is guilt-free French onion dip. My first question is, how come you didn't call it Corey's guilt-free French onion dip?
Probably mainly because it was a nice collaboration between my wife, Jennifer, and I.
Ah. Well, you could have called it Jennifer and Corey's guilt-free French onion dip. Anyway.
I'm typically the one who actually makes it, so, yeah, maybe I could have put my name, but I like to make sure that credit doesn't all go to me.
I gotcha. How'd the two of you come up with this one?
Looking for good snack alternatives. My wife is allergic to yeast, and if you look at food labels of many snack items, actually a lot of food items, there is yeast or yeast derivatives within the ingredient list, so we really had to find a good way to come up with a good snack idea. And French onion dip is kind of a family favorite for most families. And that was the one we worked on the most. It's been through many generations to finally come up with this one, which is simple and easy and very tasty.
You know, it's interesting. I look at this and I think of my mother's traditional French onion dip, which was full-fat sour cream, pour in a bag of Lipton's onion soup, mix it up, and invite the relatives over. And frankly, that was the only thing we ever had dip in our house, you know, mm-hmm. that along with regular potato chips. Now, Tom's mom, what did she do when she had parties?
She never had parties.
She never had.
It's true.
He's never had parties. Okay, so let's go with what we have. I like, by the way, the idea of simplicity. I like complexity with some things, but with something like this.
Let me ask first, before we get to the ingredients, how many does this serve?
Well, you're putting it out at a party. It's kind of hard to determine, but if you look at the yogurt container, it's probably somewhere between 4 and 6. Mm-hmm. If you're just sitting down having that only as a snack, much more if it's out as one of the snacks on the table.
Yeah, so this is good for parties.
Well, it's good for parties.
Right.
And usually if I have a party, I don't have one thing on the table. I have 3 or 4 things on the table because that's just the way it is. You know, I'm always worried about the pogrom and I'm never going to have enough food. Okay, start out with 1 to 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil. That's extra virgin olive oil you tend to use?
The best quality you can get.
The best quality you can get. Very important, more certainly for a dip than even for cooking because of that. 1 cup of diced onions.
A cup of diced onions.
That's right. So you dice them. You make them as fine as you can make them, almost to minced or?
Probably, no, not really a mince.
Okay.
A little bit bigger than that. It's nice to actually have the bite of the sweet onion when it's caramelized.
Got you. So it's the bite of the sweet onion. So you want to dice them. You don't want to mince them. You want to be on the beginning side of dice, so a bit larger. 1 to 2 cloves of diced garlic, putting through a garlic press, I assume that, or you chop it up?
I don't have a garlic press, so I chop it up.
You don't have a garlic.
But I do that as fine as I possibly can.
Got you. Now, a large container of plain non-fat Greek yogurt. So are you looking at the Bulgarian-type yogurts? When you say Greek yogurt, I think a lot of our listeners will wonder what that is and where you get it.
Greek yogurt we're finding more and more in regular grocery stores. There usually is one option. Larger grocery stores usually have about 3 brands now. Greek yogurt seems to have, an extra process where they're straining it. So it comes out a thicker consistency.
That's right. That's right. It's a thicker,
great substitute for sour cream.
Absolutely, I agree with that. And I think of it as Bulgarian yogurt, Greek and Bulgarian yogurt. And in fact, I had it many years ago when I was in San Francisco, lived there for a couple of summers, and then for years I could never find it. And then lo and behold, a Trader Joe's opened up in Madison, and bang, here it was there. And you're right, I've noticed it. It's at other grocery stores, and it wasn't around 10 years ago. And it's a thicker, more consistent, more robust yogurt to it. Not usually, if you have it sweet, it's not as sweet. I think it's great. And you're right. Good substitute for sour cream. A couple pinches of kosher salt. I love kosher salt. It's a thicker grain of salt and it tastes better. And a half teaspoon of white ground white pepper to give it a bit of bite, huh? So, okay, well, let's make it. Mm-hmm. So heat the oil to medium or medium high in a nice low-wide frying pan. Then add the onions with a couple of pinches of salt, stirring occasionally to caramelize those onions. So how long do you actually saute them for?
Oh, it's probably a good
maybe 7 to 10 minutes. I don't recommend leaving the kitchen while you're doing it, because if they turn black, you've basically ruined the recipe.
Ruined the recipe. But that's important.
They're not good. Once they start turning a tan, start stirring a lot more and wait till they get a much darker brown.
And you'll
smell a difference. You'll see a difference in the texture. And that's when they start getting very nice and sweet.
That's the most important part of the recipe, because that's where the recipe can go astray. So during the final minute of cooking, stir in the garlic. So it's going to be there for just a little bit of time, say 30 seconds or a minute. Turn the heat off. Let it cool to room temperature about 10 minutes. And then once it's cool, combine the onion and garlic mixture with yogurt, pepper. Add a pinch or two more of salt to taste. Mix thoroughly. Refrigerate for several hours, but preferably overnight. I like making things overnight because then I don't have to have a dirty kitchen when I actually have friends over at the house. Stir again in the morning. You know what I'm talking about, because you want your kitchen to look kind of like you didn't do anything, but you really did a lot. Yeah. And this is when that rich brown color appears at its best, and you can use it again. I love it. 115 calories per serving. Very little fat in the serving. It's a dynamite recipe. Yeast-free, guilt-free, and yeast-free. And I think we should call it Corey's Guilt-Free French Onion Dip. I love it.
Now, Corey, how long will this keep?
Well, in my fridge at home with Jennifer and I, no more than 2 days. And I've never had to put any away after a party. So I really am not a good judge of how long it'll keep in the fridge, because it just does not last.
We appreciate it. Thanks for sending it to us.
And thanks for having me on.
You bet. And for sending us this winning recipe, Corey gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
+1 800 462 7413, our toll-free number. Do you have a question for Zorba? Well, we have an open line. Callers waiting, but a line open for you at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in Wichita Falls, Texas. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
I have a really, really strange question to ask.
Mm-hmm.
When I am in social situations, having to talk in front of a group of people, or when I've had too much to drink, mm-hmm. my face turns red, along with my neck and chest. And it's not like a rash. It's like, it's just like nerves. And I was wondering, is there any medication that I can take for that, or anything else I can do to kind of break out of that?
Is it kind of like blushing, sort of?
It is very much like blushing, but it is very hot, and it's a very deep red.
And how long does it last? Okay, so here it is. You have this redness. You're in a situation. First of all, how quickly does it happen?
I would say it's immediate.
It's immediate. Okay, something happens.
And in college, I even took speech classes,
mm-hmm. okay.
and I cannot break through it. And so I don't know, maybe, you know, I don't know how to go through and find something to kind of get rid of it.
Sure, let's talk about it. Now, when you notice it, does your pulse go up? Do you feel like all of a sudden you have a fast pulse or not?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay. Step number one is to try a beta blocker. Beta blockers, Inderol was the first beta blocker in the class, called propranolol, atenolol. There are about 7 or 8 different beta blockers that are on the market today. And beta blockers can be highly effective with this. I would try it. Now, beta blockers are used for stage fright all over the place. A lot of people, before they get up on stage, take a beta blocker. What happens is they don't have the exaggerated pulse that they get when adrenaline is shooting through their body. They often will keep from having a blush response. And it's usually immediate. And you have control. When you give up and you give a speech, when I do, I know that first 10 seconds, my brain is going quickly and I'm up for it, and I don't get control over that feeling for about 15, 20 seconds. And I'm pretty good at giving speeches. So We've got to keep that pulse from going up. Beta blocker, I would try propranolol, P-R-O-P-R-A-N-O-L-O-L. Oh, propranolol, hard name to pronounce. Mm-hmm. I would try 10 milligrams. You can go up to 80 milligrams of that particular tablet. Comes in 10s, 20s, 40s, and 80s. That's what I would try. And if that didn't work, I would try another one called atenolol, A-T-E-N-O-L-O-L. That's step one. If that doesn't work with it, what you can also do, either with it, combining it with it, is you can take a combination of aspirin, Claritin, generic Claritin, 10 milligram tablets, and Singular, S-I-N-G-U-L-A-R, 10 milligram tablets. And sometimes that combination will also work. Now, people often don't want to take that every day, but they will. People have a blush response to alcohol. When they go out and they drink, that often works. Aspirin, Singular, and Claritin together will work. But in your case, I think I tried the beta blocker, and that may be the way it is.
Thank you so much for your help.
Sure, we appreciate
You're welcome.
You are a good public speaker, Zorba, and you're good in social situations. I'm neither.
Yeah.
I don't like social situations. Yeah, I'm uncomfortable. Yeah. I can't give a speech.
Yeah.
You'll recall.
Yeah, okay.
There was a time a few years ago when you and I appeared together to give short speeches.
Yes.
We were honored for the show.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And it was it was a very important organization.
Yes, it was.
And you gave
yes,
up and you gave a really nice speech.
That's right.
And I got up and I said, thanks for inviting us. And I took out my harmonica.
That's right. I remember that. You took out your harmonica.
I can't give a speech.
That's right. You took out your harmonica.
That was so inappropriate.
Your harmonica. Yeah, but everyone liked your
You think? I don't know if they liked it.
Absolutely liked it. Come on.
They applauded.
We got an award. And you got up and played the harmonica. And you didn't even get the award for playing harmonica. I think it was awesome, Tom.
Anyway, time for a tip now, Zorba. Courtesy of our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox, this advice comes to us from Kim in Spokane, Washington. She writes, you mentioned two products recently on your show, V8 juice and peanut butter. I, too, am a picky person and happen to use V8 as a substitute in beef stews or braises instead of wine. As to peanut butter, you said it was good with anything but steak. Well, I'm told it works well as a tenderizer flavor enhancement. Spread the peanut butter on 30 minutes before grilling, then grill per usual. No, thank you.
No, thank you. I'm not going to try that particular recipe unless I have a cheap cut of meat.
Want to share your tip with the show? We want to hear it. Send it in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have more of your calls coming up and our medical myth buster right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The phone number again, 1-800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, there's a race on to come up with a vaccine for the swine flu. And some are concerned that the race is going too fast and that there may be some dangers involved here.
Well, first of all, there's a lot of danger involved when it comes to flu. Let's look at influenza. In 1918, basically, there was the first H1N1 strain. That really is what it's from, where flu made a major change. Probably came from the avian environment, from the bird environment. And lo and behold, we actually have had influenza that has been affecting us since 1918. And the flu changes all the time. Now, the H1N1 strain, we think, is more virulent than other strains. And about every 15 years or so, there's a major change in what occurs. Looking back in the 70s, during the time of Gerald Ford, a major vaccination against the flu during that time, and lo and behold, it had side effects. There were people who came down with Guillain-Barré syndrome, which used to be also called the French polio. Significant side effects. They believe it was from the way the vaccine was manufactured. They never figured it out. We used different techniques today, but that's on people's mind. Now, on the other end, in Europe, they have a different step. They said, we're worried about this particular strain of influenza, and so we're going to go through not our usual testing, but to certainly fast track it so that people are going to start to be tested.
Well, isn't that risky?
Well, the whole thing is risky. First of all, let's not forget that 20,000 to 30,000 people die every year from flu.
Right.
But we don't have a clock in the upper right-hand corner of the TV screen clicking off the number of deaths, and we're going to get that. So there is hysteria with a capital H when it concerns influenza. In other words, we're worried about it. We're thinking about it. Well, good luck, America. 20,000 to 30,000 people die a year of influenza, and we should all be immunized. I mean, all in terms of the fact the high-risk people. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people don't get immunized. Now we're starting to worry about swine flu, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. But there's a hysteria. We don't know how significant it's going to be, but we do know that it is a virulent strain.
Part of the deal here, getting this vaccine ready, is a testing on humans.
That's right.
I don't want to be tested.
Well, you're not going to do that. There are a lot of people who are going to roll up their sleeves and say, I'm going to be tested because I want to be. I'd like to have it tested, and I'm willing to do that to my body to help other people take care of swine flu. Oh, there are people who do that all the time.
So those people are good people, and I'm a bad person.
Well, I didn't say you're a bad person. I didn't say that. But there are people who do that. There are people who say, I'm willing to sacrifice myself. Yes, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I definitely would be one of those people who would roll up my sleeve and say, test it, and I'll do that. And there are a lot of people who are willing to do that. What we need is we need to fast-track swine flu vaccine in this country because there is a potential epidemic out there. We don't know how serious it is, but if we don't have a vaccine, it's going to be worse.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. And a listener with us now in Overland Park, Kansas. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about caffeine in pregnancy. You know, I've read that you can have up to like 300 milligrams. And, you know, really I'm just wondering, is it safe? Is it not safe? I don't drink coffee and I gave up tea, but I still drink soft drinks,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering if I should stop.
How far along are you?
Well, I'm actually 6 months pregnant, but I gave up soda during the first trimester, but I'm kind of a caffeine addict, so I started drinking it again.
Caffeine. So you drink it.
And then I felt guilty, so I was like, I should call.
So there's caffeine addiction on one side and guilt on the other. So you're drinking Dew? Is that your soda?
No. I drink diet soda, and I try to keep it to, like, just one can a day.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something about caffeine. We have been trying for years to prove that caffeine is bad for us, causing cancer of this and cancer of that and heart disease and stroke. And you have older people say, oh, I don't touch caffeine anymore because it's bad for me. And then you have all this hullabaloo about pregnancy and caffeine. And there is no good, well-controlled studies. There are no good, well-controlled studies that show that caffeine is bad for you during pregnancy. So, you know, this magic number of 100 milligrams a day, 200 milligrams a day, 300 milligrams a day. There's no magic number out there. So my thought is be reasonable. Be reasonable. You know, a regular cup of coffee is only 200 milligrams a day. So a big mug of coffee, which is what most Americans drink, is really about between 300 and 400 milligrams a day. That's not a lot of caffeine. That's not a lot of caffeine. I think it's fine. I think it's safe for the baby. I don't see anything wrong with it. We usually stay away from excessive caffeine simply because it makes us irritable and can upset the stomach, but it's not bad for the baby. That's the issue. Is it bad for the baby? Believe me, if it were bad for the baby, it would be on every coffee pot in America because we know, for instance, alcohol is bad. And you go into bars now and you'll see a sign on the wall. And in some places, a waiter or a waitress, if they see you as pregnant, won't serve you. Mm-hmm. There's some places such as New York City where they will not serve alcohol to an obviously pregnant woman. But they will serve coffee. You can go in any coffee house in America and have it. So you're okay. So and limiting the soft drinks is a good idea because it's sugar. There's sugar issues with pregnancy and of course the diabetes issues. So
do you know boy or girl?
A girl.
Oh.
A girl. Is this your first baby?
This is my first baby.
Well,
yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
Oh, yeah, pretty excited. So yeah, you can have some caffeine. You're not drinking a lot. Enjoy it. Relax. It'll keep you awake and good luck on your delivery.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call at 800-462-7413. Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today from Kelly in Cumberland, Wisconsin, about sunburn. Kelly writes, I was told to take a shower after being sunburned to stop the burning action. I have taken showers both sooner and later after getting sunburned, and I have never noticed the difference. I have put my hand with a regular burn in very cold water to stop the burning, but a cold shower on sunburn doesn't seem to matter.
That's right. May not necessarily matter. First of all, sunburn is a reaction of the sun. It's a radiant action. It's not the same as a burn. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you get a burn, it's actually a totally different issue. In a case like that, cold water might actually feel better. And the problem is our skin has basically received too much solar radiation and becomes very, very painful to have anything on it at all. I can remember as a child getting sunburn, and as soon as my mother would put on a T-shirt, it would hurt, just having it on there. And that's called allodynia. There's actually a word for that to describe it medically. My recommendation, obviously, is don't get sunburned.
Right.
The first recommendation is if you're still getting sunburned, you're doing something wrong, like you're in the sun too much and you're not wearing sunscreen. Mm-hmm. It should be something in the past. You don't need sunburn. And if you're an adult, don't get sunburned. Take precautions. The higher the SPF, the better off you are. Now, as far as cold water is concerned, don't do it if it doesn't feel better. Take a little Tylenol. Take a little ibuprofen. Find a comfortable position. Put a fan on if you want to soothe it. And sit back and watch some television. That's the best treatment I would recommend.
Some cold water won't help it.
That's right. Cold water is not the treatment. The treatment for sunburn is not to get it.
If you have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust, send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. Oh, and one more thing. Never, ever, ever use ice on sunburn because ice stops the circulation to the skin. And when you stop the circulation to the skin, you make things worse.
1-800-462-7413. On to Green Bay, Wisconsin we go. Hello.
Hello, gentlemen.
How can we help?
I have an earth-shattering medical question for you. My wife and I were discussing gray hair, and I had tried to grow a beard several years ago, and I noticed when I trimmed it that the gray ones were always longer than the ones, the few that had color yet. And I'm not going to say my wife has gray hair, but we were discussing this, and she seemed to notice maybe in one of her friends that same trait with the gray hair. And we were wondering if maybe those were just why that would happen, if they were just more robust hairs and ran out of the ability to make color sooner, or if there was a reason that once they lost color, they seemed to be a little faster growing.
Well, now I have a gray beard, and as it was transitioning, I don't recall noticing that the gray was growing faster than the brown.
Uh-huh. But how much would you notice something like that, Tom?
Well, why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't
Maybe
I
it's know? Just me, Tom.
Are you saying I'm not observant or don't care?
I'm just wondering where this fits
You're
into your
I'm
personal.
Scraggly?
I mean,
I'm
where
scraggly?
Where this fits into your personal hygiene schedule? That's all.
Well, okay, doctor. Why do gray hairs grow faster?
I don't know if gray hairs grow
faster. What kind of doctor are you?
I don't know if gray hairs grow faster. I don't know. I was reading an article about gray hair in men and women, and we tend to gray at about the same rate and the same time. If you look at once you're 40, roughly, I think it's 20 or 25% of men and women will start to have gray hair, and by the time you're 45, it increases by the time you're 50. And the particular article we're talking about movie stars who were older, and the fact that they don't have gray hair, which means they probably dye their hair. Statistically, a number of them dye their hair, and they were talking about, well, is it Brad Pitt or this person or that person?
Yeah.
So we know that hair grays as you get older, but I don't think the gray hairs grow longer. You're just lucky.
Lucky? Why lucky?
Lucky.
I don't know. Unlucky.
No. Lucky. He's a lucky guy.
Oh.
He's got a wife who noticed that gray hairs are longer. She's paying attention to him. She loves him. She's thinking about him. You're lucky.
There you go.
Thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Before we leave for the week, Zorba, you've been cleared of a charge from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police.
Oh, thank
many
you.
Members of the Zorba
thank
Pastor,
you.
Many members
thank
of
you.
The Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police came to your defense, including Deputy Gabe from the Midwest Bureau. He writes, I listened with distress as you allowed a misinformed emailer to make you put a dollar in the grammar bucket. Please remove your dollar. Ask her to send in one for her error and also require her to turn in her phony grammar police badge.
Oh, wow.
You,
wow, Deputy, you're really upset about
you
this.
You were right. Misusing words is indeed a malapropism from the character by the same name in Richard Sheridan's play The Rivals. For example, water boils at 100 degrees centipede is a malapropism. Apparently, she confused the definition of a malaprop with that of a, Gabe continues, spoonerism, named after the Reverend Spooner. He transposed the initial sounds of words,
right,
saying,
right,
our queer old dean instead of dear right. old queen, and making other funny mistakes from his pulpit while preaching to his parents.
That's right, a spoonerism. I forgot all about spoonerisms. That's right. Thank you. Finally, I'm finally exonerated. And, I wish I could spoonerize that.
And our producer, Adam Friedrich, says this is one of about 1,000 listeners who sent in correcting this very, very, very bad police.
You know what I like about this? Public radio people pay attention to the way language is. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Well, I think the malaprop case is closed now, but if another case needs to be opened, just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba, we'll see you next week.
Take care and stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
Don't forget you can call us day or night at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hall and Oates lookalikes, Brad Kohlberg and Adam Friedrich, are the two guys on the other side of the glass putting this hour together. Adam Friedrich also serves as our executive producer.
Yay!
Congratulations, Adam.
Congratulations,
our
Adam.
Theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
National support for Zorba Pastor on Your Health comes from the AED Superstore, helping people save lives with Philips HeartStart automated external defibrillators for business, school, travel, and home. Available at AEDSuperstore.com. Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0815Z.
PRI, Public Radio International.